19th Committee on Rules. We have a number of electeds in the room. We're going to try and get them in and out of here as quickly as possible. We're going to open a public hearing. We're officially in subcommittee on Senate Bill 1094. Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, my name is David Nelson, State Senator from District 29, representing the counties of Morrow, Umatilla, Union, and Wallowa. And Senate Bill 1094 is a proposal for to create, a super site for a racetrack. The City of Boardman, Port of Morrow, and Morrow County have all done a lot of work on this. They've gone through a lot of the land use situations, and so they've done quite a lot of work with it. They have some proposals. There's a fair amount of folks here in the audience that want to testify as to what's happening and the progress they made, and I think rather than me sitting here talking about it, you should probably listen to them. But this is something that they're considering, that they have the land and the acreage. There's a lot of things that are very good about this site. It's not being used for farmland at this 55. It's basically rock. It's close to the I-84, close to the Columbia River. There's an airport close by. There are just lots of good things about it, and I know that the committee would like to hear the details, and I will close with that unless there's some questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Nelson?
Oh, there's lots.
Katie, do you want to bring up the sign-up sheet since we're... What number would be on Senator Lim here on? Do you know?
Progression Road.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sorry. All right, you folks are lucky. You live a ways away. Representative Lim, I know we're waiting for Senator Monica Anderson before we hear your bill. So she's in Budget Committee and she'll be here in a few minutes, okay? Are you okay waiting? I know you guys are really busy in the House.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Okay, Mr. Glenn, Ms. Middlesdorf, Ms. Billy Morris. Don't know whether it's female or male.
She's a girl.
Okay. Come on, Ms. Morris.
All right.
Yes.
1094.
Okay, thank you. We're in Senate Bill 1094. We're officially in full committee, or at least we have a quorum. Definitely. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Middlesdorf, and I'm the Economic Development Director for the Port of Morrow. I'd just like to take a few minutes. I know you have a lot on your agenda today. I wanted to talk about this bill, 1094. The Port of Morrow has been working on siting a speedway for 5 years now. We just hit our fifth-year anniversary. We've been through a lot of work on planning process. What this bill will do for us is allow for amenities other than the speedway, the racetrack itself, to be sited on the speedway site, as we're calling it. There are opportunities for hotels, restaurants, associated facilities that currently are not allowed on this site, other than a very minimum amount of rooms and minimum amount of usage for speedway time only and no other time. There are some other things that this bill will do that will just make it easier for the developer to try and get the speedway sited here. The speedway is very, very important to the people in Morrow County and to the state of Oregon. There is not currently a speedway in the Pacific Northwest, and you've probably been reading in the paper about the state of Washington and what they're mm-hmm. doing. They're now looking at about their third site in Washington. We feel that after looking at the needs of a speedway, the transportation requirements, the number of people in and out of a facility, that we really do have an ideal site for a speedway in the Northwest, and are hoping that passage of this legislation will make it easier for the developer to be able to financially put a deal together to get the speedway sited.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Morris.
Thank you very much. Billie Jean Morris, Director of the Chamber of Commerce in Boardman. And I would like to take just a moment and speak about the importance of economic development and business retention in Morrow County, and not only just in our county, but the other small counties that are to the southwest of us. Imagine people headed to the racetrack, and if a gas station in a small little community like Morrill or whatever sells 5 more tanks of gas, what that does for their bottom line. And so we're looking at this as business retention. We don't expect that we're going to have all kinds of new businesses come to town as a result of this super speedway. However, we do know that we will have a lot of people stopping in for gas, overnight stays, grocery store, and food. And we think this is an ideal opportunity to grow the bottom line of our local businesses and so that they can provide more services to our community. So economic development, business retention is what we're looking at. And we're hoping that the committee will have a pass a due recommendation on this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Glenn.
May I presume upon you, Madam Chair, Mayor Glenn is going to bat cleanup. May I
sure,
step in here?
Sure, that's totally fine. So you
okay.
must be Mr. Tallman.
Yes, I'm
okay.
Judge Tallman from Morrill County.
Ah.
And thank you very much for having us here and listening to our testimony today. As Lisa Middlesdorf has already mentioned, we have been working on this project for a number of years, and we actually do have a number of documents in place. So the citizens of our county are very much in favor of this project. There are those who would occasionally speak about a particular area that they might have some question about it. But for the most part, we have broad general consensus that this is what we would seek. This is what we would want. We believe that the impact will be to the state of Oregon as a whole, also to our region. It won't be just to Morrill County, although we know that it will have impact in Morrill County, and then it will also have impact in the Northwest. I would like to say that we do dream big in Morrill County. Morrill County has purchased, 3 years ago, we purchased 6,200 acres of property to the south and built a park. That park is an OHV park. That park, just from the income from camping fees alone, we don't charge anything at all to come to the park and run your ATV or your four-wheel drive. The revenue from that park just to camp has moved in on the first quarter, when we compare first quarters to first quarters, $1,100 the first year, $2,900 the second year, and this being the third year, the first quarter, we just got the numbers in, $7,970. And so we're dreaming big. We think this is another part of that. We are looking at this as a destination site. And so we would ask again, as we said, for a pass of this legislation. We think it will have tremendous impact to all of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Tallman. Just one question. We have, mentioned Washington, and I thought that we had already lost the bid to Washington. Is that not the case?
That is not really the case. What has happened in Washington is ISD has expressed interest in a site now in Bremerton. I think this is the third location that they have looked at in Washington. They still need to consider all of the local impacts and all of the land use work that they need to go through on those sites.
ISC is...
It has not slowed down the developer on our site at all.
Okay.
Do you need ISC? Do you need that name?
Yes.
ISC.
International Speedway Corporation.
Okay. Sir Ringo, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. Thank you. Could you just describe for a minute the hurdles that are faced in this project if there isn't a bill? I mean, my understanding is land use application was made. LCDC did not approve part of that, and I just appreciate clarification.
They did not approve part of it. What we have before us now is a limited number of activities that can happen on the Speedway site, a minimum number of hotel rooms, a minimum number of gas stations, of convenience stores, of restaurants.
And what was it that caused them to place those limitations?
It's outside of a city.
Okay, but is there anything more specific? Was it a land use goal?
We did have to go through a goal exception process.
And they just did not approve that.
Right. So some of those items are limited in the square footage configuration, uh-huh, or the number of rooms, and actually the times of the year that it can be used.
Uh-huh.
All of those are tied to Speedway events only, cannot be advertised on the freeway for any passersby, which really limits the amount of ability for the developer to receive any profit ability on trying to make all of those activities work.
Just to follow up, Matt, and is it your belief that these limitations essentially kill the deal in Morrill County?
The developer is telling us it's very difficult at this point to try and put a deal together.
Okay.
The way that it isn't.
All right. What's the dollar amount of development that might occur if this goes forward? I've heard big numbers.
It is big numbers. Depending on the size of the project, it could be $100 million to $250 million.
I see. And that's the initial development. And then is the idea that the track would be in use 52 weeks a year? Or?
They are hoping. Races are categorized in different size of events, and they're hoping, you know, to have a few in an upper-end category that might have 75,000 people and some in the probably 40,000 range and some in lower ranges. But they're hoping that there'll be some kind of activity out there on a regular basis, whether it is a training facility, a mechanic shop that's doing training, and smaller events of other types, not just the big event.
Thank you.
Thank you. That sort of leads me to another question. We're having a little fight down here at the Capitol about expanding the North Bend Airport. Do you anticipate, should this move forward, I know there's a lot of things that need to happen, that we would need to do some updating at the Pendleton Airport, or can the Pendleton Airport handle the air traffic that this might result in, or will not be an issue?
I think the Pendleton Airport would love to have additional traffic based on this speedway. We do have an airport on site.
Really?
I have a diagram here that I can show you. And the developer is asking us that some point in the future that we might further develop our airstrip as well and take it out to 10,000 feet.
Okay.
And I have a diagram I can come show you.
That's okay. Questions? Thank you all very much. Hey, Mr. Mayor, why don't you stay there? Representative Smith, why don't you come on up? And then I have Monty Grove, Bob Rindy, Dave Barrows, and Stephen Confori signed up. All the rest of you, I know you're pretty accessible. We have a very lengthy agenda in a very short time period, so either talk with individuals, members of the committee, get us some written testimony, or come grab us in the hallway. So,
thanks,
good afternoon.
Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Thank the committee very much for the opportunity to come speak to you, and particularly thanks to Senator Nelson for introducing this very important legislation, not only to Morrill County, the city of Boardman, but I believe the entire state of Oregon. Oregon needs a speedway, and it needs to be in or near Boardman. Perhaps you did not know, but it only rains in Boardman on Tuesday, only twice a year. A rain stops races. Soon ISC will realize that as well. A racetrack in the Pacific Northwest will be located in the desert of the Inland Empire, and we're ready. The city of Boardman has in place sewer, water, police force, and other urban services sufficient to grow our city perhaps two or three times its present 3,000 population, but we would be overwhelmed if all of the commercial activity associated with this tract were located within our urban growth boundary. Moreover, we recognize that certain commercial uses must be located virtually within walking distance of the racetrack. There will be significant commercial development within the city, but some things must necessarily be located, as I say, within walking distance of the racetrack, and Senator Ringo had his finger on it just moments ago when he earlier indicated that when this plan was first proposed now several years ago, current land use planning rules and goals prohibited those uses outside an urban growth boundary. This bill cures all of those problems and receives the full support of the city of Boardman, and we certainly hope that this committee will pass it on with a new pass recommendation.
Thank you.
Again very much.
Representative Smith, welcome.
Well, thank you, Chair Brown. It's truly an honor to be here this morning. Let me begin by introducing myself for the record. I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith, and I have the distinct pleasure of serving District 57, which includes Union and Wallowa County, parts of Umatilla County, and Morrow County, where I reside. And I think what you've seen here today is an example of what Morrow County is all about, and that's partnership and leadership coming from the chamber and from the board and from the city and the county. And I want to express my gratitude to them for coming down here to show what I'm so proud of, and that's the unification of our county. I also want to thank very quickly Senator Nelson for bringing forward Senate Bill 1094. And I also want to thank Director Shetterly and the Governor's Office for allowing this communication to occur. I know we're in a public hearing today, and I know we're dealing with a very, very complex bill with a tremendous policy implication to the state. What I would share with you is that Director Shetterly and I met earlier today, and upon his urging, he thought it would be a good idea over the next couple days for local folks and with perhaps a member or two of your committee and myself and Senator Nelson to get together and try and work through some of the particulars on Senate Bill 1094, and I truly appreciate his willingness and leadership on that issue. Just very quickly, I know time is urgent and you have a lot of bills on your schedule. Morrow County is at a crossroads of trying to determine where it is going to be over the next century. And this crossroads is something that they've come to with a little bit of struggle. The economy in Morrow County, no matter how difficult or no matter how much they try, is still in a difficult situation. South Morrow County has lost its ability to harvest timber, and it's at the whims of the international markets in terms of agriculture, and that also plays out in North Morrow County as well. Senate Bill 1094 provides an opportunity to diversify its economy and to bring in an economic base that would help alleviate the downs that come naturally in a natural resource-based economy. So we ask that you'll give special attention to Senate Bill 1094 based upon the needs of what we're trying to accomplish back home. Very quickly, I do want to thank you again, Chair Brown. I really do appreciate the fact you'd give this a public hearing.
We have lots of time right now, so.
Because we're in public hearing and I desperately want this bill to advance, I shall move on. What I would share with you really quick is, as chair of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development down in budget, I look forward to working with all the economic development partners to make Senate Bill 1094 move forward. And in the interest of your time, I will conclude and say thank you once again.
Thank you. Senator Shields.
I hear a lot about the benefit. Do either of you want to talk a little bit about the risk of what lies ahead for you? I mean, your hopes are, your plans are big, but if you put a lot out there and don't get a return on your investment, what kind of risk do you face?
Some of the risks we see are opportunities. The opportunities to provide urban services to the facilities developed here, the opportunities to provide a viable facility for a private developer who of necessity must have a return on investment. And that's why this bill is so important, is that in order to justify the investment of $150 or more million dollars in a race facility that we all know very well will not have its first major scheduled race for 3 or 4 years because of scheduling of those sanctions. The other associated or related facilities are necessary to provide a revenue stream to justify the initial investment in the track itself. The downside, of course, is that the major racing authorities do not sanction races for longer than that period. But with the flexibility included in this bill, there is ample opportunity to develop other sources of tourist attraction, such as car shows and this sort of thing, to mitigate any loss and potential major race issues. The studies that I have seen indicate 8 or 10 major events a year, plus perhaps 20 or more minor events attracting anywhere from 12 to 50,000 spectators.
Yeah. And I would add to that, risk management is always part of any economic development project. And the Port of Morrow, who I'm so proud of, as the second largest port in the state of Oregon, on a daily basis assesses the risk of all the projects they work on. And while this is a large commercial and industrial venture, this is nothing new to the Port of Morrow. In the past, they've worked with companies such as ConAgra and Simplot, Tidewater, Portland General Electric. They're used to working with not only Fortune 500 companies, but also Oregon-based companies that are of significant magnitude. And so, there's always risk with any development. The question is how do you manage that? And I can assure you, as the elected representative for Morrow County, I couldn't feel more comfortable in placing the county I represent in the hands of those economic development professionals.
Thank you. Appreciate you joining us today.
Back to the budget so we can get out of here.
Thanks. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1094. I'd like to move us into works, actually. Representative Dalto, why don't you come on up and House Bill 3117, please. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3117 authorizes use in an exclusive farm use zone a county law enforcement facility that existed as of August 20th, 2002 and is used to provide primarily rural law enforcement services.
Apparently, Mr. Greg Olson is here on behalf of the bill as well. I think we're pretty familiar with the bill. We heard it last session. Anything you wish to add to Ms. Harris's comments?
No, but I appreciate very much that you scheduled this bill. I appreciate your support for Marion County.
Mr. Olson.
I couldn't have said it any better. Thank you.
All right. Any questions for this panel?
We're talking too long.
All right. Let's close the public hearing. Open a work session. No amendments. House Bill 3117, correct?
Correct.
All right. Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. David, did you want to carry the bill?
Carry the bill?
Yeah. We have to wait until you're a little older. Who would you like to have carry the bill?
Not that
Sir Courtney?
Yes, Senator Courtney.
Okay. All right. We'll see if we can get him to carry this bill.
That was fun there.
All right. Let's go down to work session, House Bill 2130. Ms. Harris, why don't you remind us we heard this bill several weeks ago?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. We heard this bill on July 5th. This is the bill that directs the Environmental Quality Commission to establish fee schedules for suction dredge permits. One of the questions that was raised during the hearing on the 5th was the fact that one of the provisions of the bill actually repeals a statute. There were some questions about that from the committee, and I think that the outcome was that the statute that has been repealed is very seldom used, and I think over the 20-some years that it's been in existence hasn't been used. So I think that was one of the...
Never would be. Be. Yes.
That's all I have.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'm going to have to object.
Okay. Would you please call the roll?
Senator Atchison?
No.
Senator Rico?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
No.
Vice Chair
Farioli?
Aye.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Senator Ringo, would you be willing to carry that?
Of course.
Thank you. All right. And the next bill I'm going to move into work session on is House Bill 2265. I know there's a fight about the substance of the bill. The Budget Committee needs the underlying vehicle, so we'd like to move this bill out of here. The Chair would move House Bill 2265 to the Senate Budget Committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
I'd like to move this bill with an amendment, if that's possible.
No. You can certainly move your amendment.
I move the amendment to have the discussion, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Farioli.
The Dash B8 amendment.
There's a motion on the table. I will withdraw the motion. We're in work session on the bill. Senator Farioli.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. I move the B8 amendments to House Bill 2265.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved the Dash B8 amendments to House Bill 2265. Senator Farioli, discussion.
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. The B8 amendments are exactly like the B6 amendments that the Division of State Lands presented in support of July 5th at our Senate Rules Committee hearing. On page 9 of the B8 amendments, there is a piece of new language that connects Oregon law to the federal exemption that is customary for agricultural activities contained in the Clean Water Act. The clarification would allow Oregon's farmers to maintain their existing usage of an exemption, which unusual and customary, without having the DSL appear and threaten them with civil fines and criminal sanctions for doing usual, necessary, and ordinary repair work on existing farms. If the B8 amendments are adopted, that would in fact be a truly bipartisan amendment. It will provide language that was removed from the bill in the House, which is supported by the Division of State Lands, and will include language that clarifies a long-standing issue regarding normal agricultural activities on private lands. Madam Chair, further, there has been a lawsuit on this issue in which the defendant or respondent prevailed. There is one set of rules in Jackson County for Division of State Lands removal fill as a result of that lawsuit and a different law in 35 other counties. This would assist the agency in making, or at least assist the agency to understand that activities customarily associated with agriculture would include the customary and usual exemption for removal and fill materials up to 50 yards, and also would connect those activities with those that are defined under farm use under ORS 215203, including repair, restoration, maintenance, stream bank stabilization, or construction activities associated with agricultural operations regarding the frequency of the activity and any other ag practices that are commonly utilized to maintain, repair, or restore existing farm or ranching operations. Madam Chairman, this is a sensible, reasonable amendment. It's insensible that the agency should be allowed to maintain one set of standards as a result of a lawsuit that they have lost in one county and a different set of standards in 35 other counties. Madam Chair, I believe that the agency is trying to play out the clock. The respondent in this case is an elderly gentleman I think that the agency is stonewalling this issue and intend to drag out the legal proceedings until his demise. I think that's how they intend to win this case. And I'm sure this is a reasonable, and I believe an amendment that would have bipartisan support in this chamber and in the House chamber.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli. I have not had an opportunity to review the amendments. I've been given orders to send this bill down to Senate Budget where they can address some of these issues there. Any further discussion?
He's making an amendment that I haven't had a chance to look at.
That's correct.
And so
I'm opposing the amendment and the motion, Senator Shields.
Because we want to send it on to...
Correct, the Senate Budget Committee.
Okay, that's fine by me.
All right. Would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Rico?
No.
Senator Shields?
No.
Vice Chair Farrioli?
Aye.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes no. Motion fails. Chair would move House Bill 2265 to the Senate Budget Committee. Any further discussion? Would you please call the roll, Ms. Lowry?
Now, for a point of order.
Senator Farrioli.
I believe it's our opportunity on this vote to add a minority report.
No, it's not, Senator Farrioli, because the bill is going to be referred to the Senate Budget Committee. It would not be appropriate, and the motion I've just made is without recommendation. I'm simply asking for the bill to move to the Senate Budget Committee. Ms. Lowry.
Senator Atkinson?
No.
Senator Rico?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farrell?
No.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Senator Modest Anderson, why don't you come on up? Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1096. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill? I don't know if Representative Lim is outside or if someone could give him a call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 1096 transfers exclusive control over county roads within the city of Gresham from Multnomah County back to the city. I understand there's a similar arrangement already in effect between Multnomah County and the city of Portland.
Thank you. Senator Mona Sanderson, welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for hearing this bill. I am Lori Mona Sanderson, State Senator from Senate District 25, which includes Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. This session, I have worked tremendously hard on at economic development for our state, and specifically for East Multnomah County. Economic development is vital to my city and to the state of Oregon. As the state continues to grow, so does the city of Gresham, and it currently weighs in as the fourth largest city in the state. And with the increase in population, the city of Gresham must have tools to attract business in the area. This session, we successfully passed legislation that enabled county and city governments to create strategic investment zones in their jurisdictions and pre-approve property tax breaks for big manufacturers that qualify. And that legislation helps streamline the process, and so does the legislation before you. By allowing Gresham control over its own roads, especially the main arterials, we are giving them another economic development tool. As the city looks at revitalizing projects in the city and begins to look at recruitment of future businesses, control over local transportation projects is crucial. There are concerns laid out by three cities in the area, Wood Village, Mayor Fuller, Troutdale, Mayor Taliaferro, and Fairview, Mayor Weatherby. But I do believe that Gresham has made a good faith effort to hold these cities harmless, and the quality of their roads will not be affected, and that is on the record. This issue of control of the roads by Gresham has a long history. Come please join me, yeah. Representative Lim. We have had a long history, many, many years, where Gresham has tried to get control over its roads. We have negotiated in good faith, and I personally have looked at the facts, and I understand the financial issues involved and the other political issues that are involved, but this bill is fair and equitable. we have to look at the big picture. This bill is going to help East Multnomah County to grow and prosper. Anything we can do to diminish duplication of road service and provide economic development control to the city of Gresham benefits all who live and work in East Multnomah County. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Representative Lim, welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Lim, state representative from Gresham area. I'm very happy the hearing of this bill and very happy to testify before your committee. City of Gresham has long sought the opportunity to align the urban transportation services. This issue is extremely important to my constituents and will ensure cost-effective and accountable transportation services within Gresham while allowing county to focus on its remaining road system and county-wide services. Senate Bill 1096 brings together Gresham's transportation land use planning responsibilities with full control and management of its transportation system. Multnomah County Board agreed to transfer road jurisdiction. It has taken years of discussion and independent studies commissioned by the county to get to this point. This legislation has come necessary to complete road transfer. Gresham has heard in the past that they are close to reaching agreement, but in the end, agreements have not been reached. It is time for the legislature to step in and solve this unique situation. It is in the state's best interest to ensure that the limited transportation resources are utilized in the most cost-effective manner possible. In short, Senate Bill 1096, it will bring cost-effective service delivery system, clarifies plan review, land use process, economic development such as spring water project and transportation issues. It also focuses on local service delivery. I think this is a fair bill. I'm asking your support and pass of this Senate Bill 1096. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? I guess you're off the hook this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's from 1094.
Let's close the public hearing temporarily on Senate Bill 1096. I saw Representative Thatcher. Come on up. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3240. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
House Bill 3240 permits a public employee who chooses not to be a member of a union to pay an equivalent amount of money to a public benefit corporation or a foreign corporation.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. You know, this is just a real simple, straightforward bill that clarifies what employees are already allowed to do when they opt out of paying union dues and not being in the union. They can redirect those funds towards charitable organizations. This just clarifies the parameters of what that means, charitable organizations, because there had been some disagreement in the past in applying this law. And that's simply what it does, just clarify.
Questions for Representative Thatcher? Okay. Thank you very much. All right, close the public hearing. House Bill 3240, back open to Senate Bill 1096. Commissioner Maria Rojo de Steffi, Mayor Fuller, Mayor Weatherby, and Mayor Talhofer. Let's see if we can get another chair up there for you guys. Commissioner Rojo de Steffi, I want to get you out of here so you can get home and start working on my Selwood Bridge.
My pleasure to do that. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Brown, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. With all due respect to each of you, I'm really disappointed that this issue is before you today. I'd like to give you just a little bit of history around this issue, and I know that some of you are very familiar with this. This has been a...
We need your name for the record.
I'm sorry. I'm Maria Rojo de Steffi. I'm Multnomah County Commissioner. Thank you. When I took office, I knew that this had been a long-standing issue with the city of Gresham, control of their roads, and it had been 15, 20 years people had been talking about it. And during my first 2 years in office, a couple of county commissioners had had some discussions with Gresham, but nothing moved forward. And I decided that I wanted to take the lead on this issue. I believed then, and I believe now, that Gresham should control their roads. They are a growing city. They should manage their roads. There's no question for me that that's true. And I've known Mayor Becker for at least 15 years, and I felt that we could work together to make this happen. So I was happy to take on this issue and make it happen. I initiated a three-phase approach to this to deal with this transfer. At first, we did an issues analysis, and we hired Vic Rhodes, who's a longtime transportation manager, who had neither an interest in the city or an interest in the county, but could be a neutral party to help us look at what are all the issues that we should be looking at to make this happen. And he came back with a report that we should transfer the roads also. So that was a good thing. In 2004, my board passed a resolution that said that gave me the lead on conducting a financial feasibility analysis. We wanted to make sure that we understood clearly, that all the parties understood what financially it meant to all of the cities and the unincorporated areas within Multnomah County. And we got that information back. In April of this year, 2005, the board passed a resolution authorizing me to negotiate on behalf of the county with Gresham. And I'd like to read just one line from that resolution to you. It clearly states that it is in the best interest of Multnomah County and the city of Gresham to transfer jurisdiction over county roads within the city to the city by January of 2006. We're very clear that we want to do this, and we entered into negotiation with them in May. We had our first meeting in May, which clearly, simply actually outlined all the issues that we should be looking at in moving this forward. I also invited the mayors here from Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview, and AFSCME Local 88 to sit with us in those negotiation meetings and as observers. I wanted to make sure that everything was out on the table and everybody understood every piece of this action. Again, in our first meeting in May, we outlined the issues. The second meeting, which happened about in June, I'm not sure of the date, but in June, early June, Gresham presented a proposal, and we, the county then, during that meeting, we asked clarifying questions. What does this mean? What does that mean? What does this mean? We had scheduled a third meeting to come back to Gresham with an alternate recommendation or something on their proposal. And to my complete surprise, 2 days before that meeting, it was canceled, and Gresham said, we will reschedule this meeting. 2 days after that, I heard that there was to be some kind of legislative action around this issue. I was not notified by Gresham. I was actually taken by surprise. I had entered into this negotiation in good faith. I have every intention of making this happen. The board, all of the county commissioners have every intention of making this happen. And it was clear in our resolution that we would do this by January 2006. It's the first time that the county has taken this kind of action, has made this commitment, and we are still committed to it. Again, I'm extremely disappointed that we're here today. We negotiated in good faith. We are actually continuing those negotiations even today. We are continuing those negotiations with Gresham. So I urge you not to move this forward and to let us complete our work. We'll stay on schedule. We are committed to transferring the roads, and we are committed to making sure that it is a fair and equitable transfer, and it's fair to all of the cities in our county, and to take care of our unincorporated areas also. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Which mayor would like to go next? I drew the short straw.
Okay.
I'm David Fuller, Mayor of Wood Village, and Madam Chair, members of the committee, we appreciate the opportunity to come out and be able to speak to this issue. It's very important to us, and we have submitted an amendment to this, which has been distributed to you, I believe.
There's one amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. Not that one. Okay. Okay. All right. They're coming right now. Okay.
So if you go forward, we would ask that amendment be included. But our concern is that the county, in our opinion, has done a good job over the years in taking care of the requirements of the three cities, as well as Gresham on the roads issues within our county. And for that to continue into the future, they have to have sufficient resources, both in terms of funds and people and equipment, to maintain an acceptable level of operation. This has been a long issue that's gone back years, long before I was ever on the scene. And in 1994, Gresham had gone forward with a ballot measure to try and get the roads turned over to Gresham from the county, and that was defeated by the Gresham voters as well as the county. Following that, in 1995, the county and Gresham entered into an agreement wherein that the collectors and the local roads were turned over to Gresham. And so they've slowly kept this up. And as Commissioner Rojo DeStefi mentioned, the roads proposal, which was a very comprehensive proposal paid for by the county, and we in Wood Village agreed to that in principle, that was a good approach. We believe Gresham has not operated in good faith, first to the county, then our cities, and also to the voters. The voters have turned this down once. The county has tried to work with them, I believe, over the years, and we went along with the road study, looked at that, and believe that was an acceptable approach to take. We're concerned with the boundary roads and the interjurisdictional roads. Senator Moniz mentioned the economic development and how these roads are going to give them access to new areas to develop. Well, all those areas go through our cities, so the roads abut cities in all three of our cities. So it's important that those roads be cared for as well. I guess our suggestion is that Gresham and the county be directed to go back to the table and complete this at a local level rather than getting it involved with the state. So we would respectfully request that Senate Bill 1096 not go forward.
Thank you. Mayor Weatherby? Yes,
thank you. Senator Brown, Chair Brown, and committee. One of our concerns, we specifically deal with the issue of economic development, and this goes even further for the cities, is no one opposes Gresham having the streets. It's just that if Gresham is going to be economically viable, how can that happen on the backs of the three small cities? This amendment that you received was handed over to Senator Moniz Anderson, and we've heard nothing back from her. One of the issues is this: the standard across the state and the standard that's been used between agreements between Multnomah County and all of the cities is centerline miles, and that's the financial agreement. The use in this bill of lane miles gives the city of Gresham over twice as much per road than it would for the unincorporated area or for our three small cities. The roads are the lifebloods of all of our communities, and something that's increasingly been made aware of all of our communities, is that if Gresham should not succeed and the rest of us fail, this has to be something where we all succeed. It's very important that issues such as this be dealt with. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mayor Tallhopper.
Thank you. feet are too big for this.
I have the opposite problem.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, I guess I have the most seniority of any of the mayors, and I've been mayor of Troutdale for 12 years now, just reelected last November for 4 more years. I was on the city council of Troutdale 10 years before that, so I have a lot of history on this issue. The roads issue has been one that has been fought over the years. Suffice it to say that there have been a couple of agreements made among the cities and the county, and those agreements have been broken by the city of Gresham. The thing that we are concerned about, we don't mind if Gresham gets their roads. The Multnomah County roads in Gresham, take them. But what we object to is that they not only want the roads, but they want most of the money that Multnomah County has for roads. Now, that's not fair. And how they get there is they're using lane miles instead of centerline miles. Now, historically, all throughout the state and all the counties, they talk about centerline miles, not lane miles. And if they use the term road miles, they mean centerline miles. But no, now we're talking about lane miles. Well, lane miles gives the city of Gresham about 3 times more than they would get under centerline miles. And therefore, they take a lion's share of the money that Multnomah County has for roads in Multnomah County. Now, I hope there's no bias toward Multnomah County here or in the legislature.
There's lots of it, don't worry.
No, but what I'm telling you is this. I was born in Klamath Falls, Oregon. I was raised in Prineville. I was served in the Navy and the Air Force. And I spent a great deal of time in Pendleton and Hermiston. I'm a small town. Now I live in Troutdale. I'm a small town guy who lives in Multnomah County, but I have the small town mentality. So the people in rural Oregon ought to listen to what I have to say, because we're having a bigger city, a huge city, like 95,000 population Gresham, trying to take the lion's share of road funds from the smaller cities and from unincorporated Multnomah County, and it just isn't going to work for us. It will not work. It doesn't work out financially. What our concern has been over the years, and that's why the people of Multnomah County voted down Gresham when they put that issue on the ballot. They voted it down because it wasn't fair to the rest of Multnomah County. Portland got their miles from Multnomah County, and that was a sweetheart deal that Portland got from Multnomah County. It was a long time ago.
I just want you to know, I live in southeast Portland, and we don't have all our streets in yet, so I'm still waiting.
Sure, okay. But as bad as that distribution was to Portland from Multnomah County, it was based on centerline miles, not lane miles. There hasn't been a county in this state that ever has parceled out funds according to lane miles, okay? This would be the first time. So I want you to be aware of that we're talking about lane miles here as opposed to centerline miles. And we want to make sure that the 3 smaller cities, us 3 little guys, and unincorporated Multnomah County, the rural areas like up in the Corbett area and Sauvies Island, that they have enough money to have their streets maintained and repaired. We don't ask for any more than that. We want Multnomah County to have left in their road fund a critical mass of funds to be able to serve the 3 small cities and unincorporated Multnomah County. This is a local issue. It was under negotiations over our dead body, quite frankly. The city of Troutdale didn't even want there to be negotiations. But then they said, okay, we're going to have it. It's going to be Multnomah County and Gresham are going to negotiate. We said, well, what about us? They said, well, you can be observers. And I said, well, thanks a lot. We're involved in this fight, but we're going to just be observers. So we were very, very upset that they would even have negotiations without us being involved. But we backed off and said, okay, you're going to have negotiations. We will come and observe. We accepted that because we didn't have any choice. Then, right in the middle of negotiations, because Gresham wasn't getting it quite their way, they go to the legislature and get a bill passed unbeknownst to any of us. We had no notice that Gresham was going to do that. The Multnomah County didn't have any notice that we were going to do that. That just happened. And then we reacted, of course. And we don't want this bill to go forward. If it does go forward, and I hope to gosh it doesn't, we have amendments that we propose to be incorporated into that bill. And I think the crux of this whole matter is we should be talking about centerline miles, not lane miles. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
It's clear.
We really appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much. Besides, you do a really mean parade in Troutdale, let me tell you.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Next up, Shane Bemis, Kathy Everett, and Dave Shields. And we are not going to move this bill today, so we hope you all keep working. But we still want to hear from you.
You mean keep compromising or just working?
Working.
He's the best to get.
Keep it going.
Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, committee members. For the record, my name is Shane Bemis, City of Gresham Council President. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. The first thing I'd like the committee to understand is that this is not an attack on Multnomah County or its employees. It is a reflection of our belief that the transfer will improve citizen accountability and end confusion and frustration about dual road systems, and it makes the most effective use of taxpayer dollars. We believe this will improve service delivery to our almost 100,000 residents and allow the county to focus their services on the rural transportation system and on countywide services. We have a unique situation in Gresham and Multnomah County that requires a unique solution. Multnomah County does not have significant urban unincorporated areas like other metro counties. Gresham is not an isolated community with a few county roads that travel into and through the community, but are continuous county roads outside the city. This proposal finishes the implementation of Multnomah County's 1983 Resolution A that set a policy to phase out delivery of urban municipal services. That resolution set the county's first priority on countywide services such as assessment, taxation, elections, corrections, libraries, and health services. Gresham businesses and citizens have asked that this long-awaited alignment of services be completed. I'd like to speak to a few particulars of the bill. First of all, I think you've already heard concerns expressed today about critical mass of county transportation services. That is, if the transfer will somehow hinder the ability of the county to provide services to the remaining system. Our own experience does not bear this out. Gresham's existing transportation system is made up of some 275 miles of local streets, about the size of the system the county will have remaining after a transfer of 52 miles of roads to Gresham. We manage this system with fewer resources than the county will have remaining under this bill. This proposal also transfers resources along with the roads based on the percentage of the county lane mile system that is transferred. We firmly believe that this is the most fair and equitable method for resource sharing. In this situation, lane miles most accurately reflects the relative cost to maintain and operate the road system. Simply using centerline miles would underestimate the cost to maintain and operate multi-lane urban arterials that include curbs, gutters, sidewalk signals, etc. These urban roads also carry significantly more traffic volume than rural two-lane roads. Finally, you might hear concerns about border roads, which you already have. While the bill doesn't speak to this detail, Gresham is committed to working with the adjacent cities to deal with these few roads. One idea we have is to implement city boundary adjustments to make sure border roads are entirely within one jurisdiction and not split down the center line by a boundary. In closing, I'd like to offer an example of the problems the current duplication creates. The City of Gresham assesses a transportation impact fee on new development to pay for improvements directly attributed to that development. Most of those impacts naturally occur on the county's arterial system in Gresham. We have some $17 million in improvements budgeted over the next 5 years on the county's roads in Gresham. With the current system, the county spends its resources on plan review, inspections, and other related activities for the city-funded improvements, reducing their available resources for the remainder of their system. We believe this bill finally resolves this type of service duplication and ensures the most cost-effective service delivery to all citizens of Multnomah County. Thank you for your consideration and urge your support for Senate Bill 1096.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Brown and the committee members. My name is Kathy Everett, and I'm the executive director of the Gresham Downtown Development Association, and I represent approximately 150 property owners from the downtown and regional center. Our association assists property owners in the city in the development and promotion of downtown as an economic, civic, and cultural center. We also administer the Gresham Regional Center Transportation Management Association, an association of businesses, property owners, and government, focusing specifically on transportation issues within the regional center. Additionally, I currently serve as the chairman of the Council Transportation Advisory Committee for the City of Gresham. Our association strongly supports the transfer of the county roads in Gresham to Gresham and the annual transfer of transportation revenues proportional to the share of lane miles transferred to Gresham. Having the land use component and the transportation component administered by two different government bodies brings uncertainty to our market. To our marketplace. The development community needs certainty to make investments. Planning should be done in a holistic approach, and the current arrangement is unnecessarily dysfunctional. Cities plan for their own benefits better than counties. The counties are not focused on the needs of the city. Our current system hobbles the city's ability to complete its vision for growth. Additionally, our capital resources are not best leveraged as a result of having two agencies administering the transportation component. Simply stated, the county's delivery of transportation service is inefficient. The duplication of services, regulations, reviews, and requirements are recreating development and business costs that are discouraging to quality growth and development. The time is now, the place is here, and you are the leaders that give Gresham, the fourth largest city of Oregon and the second largest city in the metro area, the opportunity to control their destiny. And in doing that, you also give Multnomah County the opportunity to focus more effectively on their countywide issues and services. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Shields.
Yes, I'm Dave Shields, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm representing Gresham Chamber of Commerce today. Also until June 20th, I was a city councilor and now retired from that position. So I have been and also involved in two negotiation sessions that dealt with the transfer of roads, so I have very good insight into that particular process, and I will respond to some of the comments that have been made previously about the ongoing effectiveness of those negotiations. But today what I want to bring before you is the chamber's support of the transfer of these roads for primarily four reasons. One is economic development. Okay, secondly is land use. Third is a clarity within the constituencies that we have. And fourth is a future annexation, especially of the Springwater area, which is about 1,000 acres of industrial land. And then besides that, Pleasant Valley, which is another 600 or 700 acres there. Basically, right now, what we have with this dual jurisdictional system is that we have a lot of inefficiencies, and those inefficiencies cause businesses a lot of time and money. Reason being is that when you plan, or if you're planning or you're developing, what you end up doing is not only if it's adjacent to a county road now, not only does the business have to submit those plans to the city, but they also have to be okayed by the county. And sometimes those particular areas are opposed to one another, and that creates, again, more time, more money expenditure for the particular businesses, and that level of efficiency is again used over and over and over and over. The consequence of that, I think, is it really does put a bad name of the city of Gresham as it relates to development, and also it doesn't look at Multnomah County in a very efficient way. By taking this bill and passing that, we'll eliminate those duality charges and duality of process going to a single process. So just on the basis of efficiency and the future economic development, land use, clarity, okay, and annexation, we encourage you to support this issue. As it related to the negotiations in the past, someone said that we were negotiating and the negotiations were going fair. We should go back to that particular table and negotiate continually. I do not agree with that assumption. We did not negotiate, and that's very true. But basically what happened is there was, and like of all the previous individuals that testified before, there was an agreement that the road should be transferred. But where we had this, you know, the real severe problem is the fact you would transfer the roads with no revenue to maintain. Now, all we are asking for is parity at the city of Gresham. If, in fact, you give the city of Portland a certain amount of money, if you give the individuals, the cities, a certain amount of money, Troutdale, Fairview, Wood Village, then on the basis of parity, you would give Gresham the same amount. Why should it be singled out because it has a road department and the others don't? The residents and the businesses of Gresham pay county tax like everybody else, plus their city tax. They pay more county tax than they do city tax, $4.37 per thousand versus $3.61. And we maintain our roads with that $3.61 and plus the money that the county gives us for certain other types of maintenance. Should we be singled out? Because one, was told to us in negotiation that there's a new paradigm shift, and that new paradigm shift means that we'll transfer the money or transfer the roads without the money. I think that's unfair and inappropriate. I encourage you to support this bill, to pass it on. Okay, Gresham should have its roads, and it should have the revenue in parity to operate and maintain those roads. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Could you comment on the lane miles versus line miles?
Center line versus line.
That seems to be what the objection of the three cities are, the center line miles, which would lane miles... Particularly on an arterial, you would have, there's more lane miles than there are center line miles. In other words, there's more money associated with those because there's more cost associated with maintaining those roads because they're simply a larger road.
Well, Madam Chair, just a
follow-up. There we go.
I missed part of their testimony, so I'm kind of guessing a little bit, but they emphasized that was the nut of the disagreement.
Right, and as Commissioner Rojo DeStefi has mentioned, the negotiations are still ongoing with Multnomah County. Mayor Taillefer has said that he will settle for nothing less than the centerline miles. However, the current negotiations with Multnomah County on what they've agreed to in principle, the dollar amount is quite simply the same, within $100,000. So the argument that if the lane miles versus the centerline miles, that there would not be enough left, that's simply what the county is proposing under their current negotiation process. So the argument doesn't bear water.
I didn't quite follow that, but I think you said that from your standpoint the difference was not that big of a deal.
I'm saying that the difference from what the county is currently negotiating with the city of Gresham, the difference in revenue is almost identical to center line or to lane miles.
I see. Madam Chair, just to...
There we go.
One of the things they said was that this bill uses the term lane miles, and that everywhere else it is calculated in terms of centerline miles. Is that accurate?
I don't know what other...
I'm not sure in terms of throughout the state, okay? But, I mean, when you're talking about maintenance, you maintain a road not in the center line. You maintain it on a lane,
yeah.
Obviously. And so if, in fact, the jurisdictional area was allocating funds on the basis of maintenance on the total project, which would be all lanes, whether two lane, four lane, five lane, three lane. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Sarah Ferrioli.
I'm sure. I don't think anybody's arguing that the road transfer ought to take place. I think that case is very strongly made here.
Yeah.
I agree with Senator Ringo. The issue is the standard on which the funding mechanism is based. And I'm particularly sensitive to the idea that if there's a finite number of dollars in the road budget, which is a characteristic of all county governments, if there is a transfer that's disproportionately generous to one jurisdiction, it will harm the other jurisdictions. That's the substance of the testimony. Why should there not be one standard that people agree to? And if the precedent is already set for the centerline miles, why should there be two sets of standards in this instance?
I agree with you, Senator. I mean, I have no problem with that. But I think what's happening is in your first statement, the notion of parity and equity has not necessarily been there. There is a standard already established with Portland in terms of how much they get for the jurisdiction of their roads. There is a standard by the three cities. They get so much. All we're saying is whatever that standard is developed in terms of all those particular entities and jurisdictions, Gresham should be treated the same. Right now, what we're saying is happening in the negotiation process, and the reason for bringing this bill before you is that we were not being treated the same. We were saying, yes, we will transfer you the roads, but guess what? There will be no transfer of revenue to maintain those roads, and it was on a declining balance. To me, that's not fair, nor is it equitable, nor does it create parity. And that's the problem that we are faced with. That's one of the reasons that we came to the legislature with this particular position to say, if in fact we cannot obtain that in the open negotiation process, appeal to a higher authority that allow that to happen. Fair, equitable, and parity.
Follow-up.
Go ahead, Senator.
Would you be opposed to the transfer to Gresham on the lane mile, or on the road, on the center line mile? In other words, if the center line mile is the standard that's established, would you then oppose the transfer of the roads to Gresham?
Is it, if it's equitable with everybody? No. If that's a standard we're going to use for everybody, let's use it.
I'll be honest.
Works for me.
Thank you very much. Ms. Senator Shields, hang on just a minute. Mr. Fussell, I'd like you to get ready to come up. Chair needs to leave to head to negotiations. We're not going to have time to move 3238 or work that today. We're looking at the Dash 9 amendments. Want to hear from folks regarding those amendments. If my colleagues are willing to stay a little longer, we would still like to hear House Bill 2181, finish the hearing on 3240, and finish the hearing on 3349. Both 2181 and 3349 have conflict amendments. There's some technical amendments problems, so we won't be moving any of those three, but I would like to finish the public hearings today. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
2181, 3349.
3240 and 3349, public hearings only. And 3238 will set over until Thursday. He's in tight.
Thank you.
Senator Shields.
Well, I'm just trying to get my head around.
Oh, my God.
I know that the chair has lots going on, so I'll ask the question to you guys. I'm trying to get my head around centerline miles and lane miles. If you have a road that's two lanes wide, centerline would be one thing. If it's a road that's four lanes or five lanes or the turning lane in the middle, it's a lot more maintenance. So I don't understand Senator Farioli. I don't understand. Maybe you wanted to differentiate, Senator. I mean, if you've got a two-lane road, using center line would mean one thing, but if you had a county road that's five lanes wide, that would mean something different. How do you deal with that discrepancy?
Senator, I guess the question that occurred to me is when the gentleman testified that there was only $100,000 difference in the road maintenance distribution, so I got a strong sense from other members that had testified previously that that's not the case. Yes, Senator, wider roads cost more to maintain.
Yeah.
Why does the city want them? I mean, we heard eloquent testimony on what they would do for the city. Certainly they're going to bring commerce opportunity and development potentials, and that would, in fact, grow the entire economy of the community. So if they get these roads and have the control of their own economic destiny, and they have to sacrifice a little bit on maintenance money, perhaps that's the trade-off they ought to be looking at.
Well, I'm just asking for more information.
Well, I think those kind of things we dealt with. But when you use the comment that, in fact, you're going to take over the roads, and the end result of taking over those roads are going to create a lot of economic benefit for the city.
That's testimony.
Yeah. Okay. That is going to create a lot of economic benefit for the city.
Yeah.
It'll be economic benefit for the community. But in terms of the road structure, what's very interesting about the efficiency right now problem is that when, in fact, you do plan a road, what you're doing is you're not necessarily penalizing the individual business or jurisdiction. It is the process you're going through to penalize the individual business owner. As an example, when I developed my commercial property, it cost me additional money because I had to submit plans where? To the city, even though it was in the city limits, but it was adjacent to a county road. The amount was, I think, approximately $8,000 more. Because it was just a review of, okay, the particular development. I think that that's where you, in fact, are very inefficient and very wasteful, and this could stop this at this particular time if it came under one jurisdiction.
The transfer of the roads, and I'm sensing the consensus that there's no problem with the transfer. The question is the revenue that comes with it.
All I ask for is parity. Whatever any other jurisdiction, if you want to run it on a particular centerline mile or lane mile, as long as that's parity between all the jurisdictions, I have no problem with that.
Okay. Any questions? Any further questions from the panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to call back Ms. Rohoti Steffi. The body language was unmistakable about the testimony that there was only $100,000 difference if you used lane miles or centerline miles. Perhaps you could correct the record for us.
Senator Farioli, members of the committee, thank you. I've asked, this is Rob Fussell, who is the chief of staff for our county chair, and he has that specific information so he can tell you exactly what the difference is in dollars between those.
Thank you. So, Vice Chair Farioli and committee, it is
your name for the record is
Rob. I'm Rob Fussell, Chief of Staff for Chair Diane Lynn. Thank you. You are right smack on the heart of the matter. And that is that if you use lane miles versus centerline miles extract a whole lot less money than lane miles extract. And the standard that has been utilized is, in fact, centerline miles by Portland when we did that agreement many years ago before our time, and the current agreements we have with Troutdale and with Fairview are on centerline miles. The difference between the bill that you have in front of you that you're being asked to move forward and the amendment that the three cities have brought forward and distributed today that they delivered to Lori Monas Anderson and to the speaker, but it's not being carried forward by anyone, in fact, is based on centerline miles. So the bill you have from the three cities is centerline miles. The bill you have from Gresham, not the bill, I'm sorry, the concept you have is centerline. The bill you have from Gresham is based on lane miles and arbitrarily extracts too much money. And so therefore what happens is it really just does impact our three cities, which is why they've come forward. And it puts us in a position where we put the rest of the service of the rest of our service area into jeopardy. So, does that help with that?
What I heard you say is that centerline miles is the standard of parity.
Centerline miles is the standard, and my understanding is that centerline miles are about 13% of our small amount of funding that we have left in the county. The center lane miles takes about 24% of our funding. With all due respect, again, I'm sitting back there wondering, why are we having this conversation? We all want the same thing. I agree 100% with former Councillor Shields and Bemis and Ms. Everett. Absolutely, this is the right thing to do. We totally agree with transferring the roads, and we want to make that happen. And as I said earlier, we are in negotiations now with them, and we have made strides in that. There are commitments that have been made that Gresham has agreed to now. I feel like I'm in a twilight zone sitting back there wondering, why are we doing this?
It happens in Salem a lot.
Oh, man. Maybe when I came into the city limits and the twilight zone.
I think it's something about this building, actually. This is just an invitation to your speculation. You don't have to answer if you don't wish to. If this bill goes nowhere in this legislative session, what do you think the prognosis for successfully concluding the negotiations would be?
We're committed to it. I am committed to it, and so is the rest of our board. We have agreed in a formal resolution that we are going to do this. And I think that the negotiations thus far, Rob has been working with the Gresham staff on that. The negotiations, reports I'm getting are going well. There are some agreements being made and understandings between both jurisdictions. So I'm 100% sure we're going to make it happen. We want it to happen.
Any further questions for this panel? I know that Mr. Groner and Mr. Penhall are both anxious to weigh in on this issue, so if you'd come forward, please. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a dream and honor to be able to sit by Bill Penhollow, who I've worked with for many years. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner. I'm representing today Ken Allen, who couldn't make it, who wanted to be here, our executive director, but he's been in Washington, D.C., in behalf of AFSCME Local 88, out of 170 locals. It's our second largest. And I'd just like to state for the record that no one has ever complained about our quality of our employees' work in terms of my members of Multnomah County. If I were to be angry, like I've heard some folks, and I've looked at this, I'd say, you know, I was a county commissioner, and I get City of Portland probably going to get mad at me, so is Multnomah County. But when I was county commissioner in Clackamas County, we solved it a bit different. We had 13 cities, now 14 with Damascus. I was the one who initiated it, so I know it well. I was getting complaints from my cities about the quality of county roads, so we turned them over to each city, and we fixed them up to their standards and gave them the roads. Now they had their own money they could get. I just want to make a point about center line. This morning, well, first a point. I like the way you're handling this, because when I watched the legislature, it seems to me this is the wrong milieu, primarily because people get angry on both sides. And I'm not here to say one side or the other doesn't have legitimate reasons. However, having been a commissioner for 8 years, I can tell you that neither side, from my experience, ever has a total handle on what's totally right. To bring this kind of issue in front of a legislative process in the waning days, with tempers flaring and irresolution of that temper, is not the style I'm used to, nor should it be by the legislature. This is a local issue that could end up in court if handled wrong with local control, and that the people have already voted. I could throw that out. But quite frankly, I gave you an amendment the Multnomah County offered, and I'm here to say that my union, Local 88, has endorsed that. Now, what is big about that is that Local 88 loses members, therefore I lose members, to the City of Gresham and the Teamsters, not the same union. So I can't guarantee, other than statutorily, 1 year, that they'll have the job. I'm working on seniority. So although that bothers Ken Allen and it bothers my president and the people in here, it seems to me the one that's been willing to sacrifice the most has been AFSCME, Local 88. And I'd just like to make a couple comments. This morning I decided to do some homework, which I see now people haven't done. So I called everybody on Centerline and Lane Miles. I wanted to know what they do in Washington County. I wanted to know, I knew what they did in Clackamas County. I wanted to know in Yamhill. I wanted to know in each and every county. And I asked Bill Penhollow, who's here. By the way, the key issue no one's asked yet, at least key to me. If you're using center line miles, how are you given your funds from the state of Oregon? Center line. Now, my logic tells me if I'm funded by the center line process, then for someone to say, and by the way, if you have the two amendments offered, this is the whole debate is down to one word, lane miles versus center line. My thesis is this, and maybe it's, but mine seems logical, and therefore I support it. That is, if you're funded by center line, by you, then it seems to me that when everyone else is using center line, not only these three little cities, I'm sorry, they'll be big, I'm sorry for that, but they'll be big. And the fact of the matter is some of the largest cities in the state are going to be in my county. Damascus won't take long to be right up there with Gresham, probably within 5 years after it's rocking and rolling, and then it really rocks and rolls. And it'll be ahead if you want to talk about size as the big thing. I'm not one of those who will do that. I'm from a small town, and I hope it remains small. But the only difference are the amendments. And the only difference, if you look at the makeup of who should sit on the reviewing advisory commission, they're identical. If you look at Gresham's and then you look at Multnomah County, so you'll notice the two different words are line and lane. So I asked, I did research again today, interesting. I found out we have 179 to 180 lane miles in Gresham, or we have 49 centerline miles. We take 24% of the budget that's after contract agreements. Realize we already give money to Gresham and the cities on centerline agreements. 24% would go to Gresham under lane miles. 13% was Comet, but I want to repeat it and reinforce it. 13% under centerline. Now, you might say Multnomah County's being unfair, but the truth is that's how you fund the counties and the cities, is on centerline, at least the counties.
Not the funding.
No. Not the funding.
No.
Clarify.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Bill Penhollow with the Association of Oregon Counties. The funding to counties is allocated, state highway funds are allocated based upon registered vehicles, I think, as you know. What I had shared with Mr. Groner, and see that we had a misunderstanding, is that annually the cities and the counties report to the Department of Transportation on the total miles under their jurisdiction, including the miles within county roads within cities. That information, along with the state's information, is reported in an annual report that they publish on centerline mile basis. They do, on occasion, identify lane miles. Obviously, the state has significant numbers of lane miles with I-5 and 84, but generally, the information is reported on the basis of centerline miles.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That's why Bill is one of my heroes. In the end, I'd just like to say that there's an attempt been made by the voters voted. By the way, I really want to know the city of Gresham, so I don't want them to be, and I care very much for their legislators. However, if you were going to talk cost effectiveness to me as a county commissioner, it wouldn't be this ongoing kind of debate. What I'd do is go to the voters and form one public works agency for all of Multnomah County. I'd have one administration. I would not have numerous. I'd bother everybody in the audience. So if we're going to be effective, let's do it right, folks, in Multnomah County. And if this were to continue, I will highly recommend that to a number of initiative-oriented folks, that we cut out a lot of the administrative overhead so we can, in fact, be more efficient and build more roads and fill more potholes. But since that was never raised, it seems to me that Multnomah County has offered an amendment that is workable based on state standards and the other county standards. By the way, all the counties in the region go by center line. Every single county in the metropolitan region. So all I say is AFSCME 75 highly recommends, even though we're the one loser of members, the amendments that Multnomah County has supported and proposed, and we would hope you would understand that meant a lot to our local to do that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and we'd appreciate your consideration.
Well, thank you, Mr. Groner. Mr. Penhollow, the question was asked earlier. In revenue sharing agreements, is there a standard we can identify?
Mr. Chair, no, there isn't. There isn't a standard used. It can vary from county to county with regard to cities, but generally the information is reported and analyzed on a centerline mile basis. As I indicated, that when we talk about the counties having 27,000 miles of road under the county's 36 counties jurisdiction, that's centerline miles of road. And as you probably know, most of the counties just maintain centerline miles, two-lane routes. Our urbanized counties are the ones that have more frequently multi-lane routes where lane miles would come into play. Mr. Chair, if I might, too, I'd also like to bring to the committee's attention, listening to the testimony today, one might wonder, is there not a process, an existing statutory process, for transferring the jurisdiction of county roads to city streets? And there very clearly is. In ORS Chapter 373, there's a provision there that allows either the county or the city to initiate the discussions on the transfer of county roads within the city limits. There have been exceptions to this. There are three or four exceptions that go back 50 to 100 years. Marion County and the city of Salem is an exception. Statutorily passed exception in 1949. But since that time and up to the present, these have been exchanged based upon the provisions of Chapter 373.270. And those agreements have been worked out on a county and city basis. And we see this legislation, again, going back to what was done 50 and 100 years ago, a bit troubling that this may start a trend of cities coming to the legislature and saying that either we don't want the county to transfer roads to us or we want to transfer all the roads to us. We feel that the provisions in the statute should be utilized in the process of this question. I hope I've helped to clarify the question on centerline versus lane miles of road, because most jurisdictions do have a few miles of multi-lane routes, but for the majority across the state, the 45,000 miles of road that the state, counties, and cities maintain, the majority of those are centerline miles and reported on that basis.
Okay, questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I'm just glad they're not fighting about Beaverton.
Just, I would like to make a clarification for the record. I think it's an important technical point. The bill that we have before us is Senate Bill 1096. It talks about road miles. The only amendment that we have to consider is the dash one, which changes the language to county road lane miles. I believe that was the amendment brought by the city of Gresham. We have been discussing a conceptual amendment from the county of Multnomah County, also supported by Oregon AFSCME Council 75 and Local 88, which would change that to center lane miles of road. But we have no amendment that discusses center lane miles of road. We're not going to take action on this bill today. Just a suggestion that the proponents of the center line may wish to have an amendment drafted for consideration by the committee. It strikes me, however, that possibly the best legislation in this case is none at all. In that case, we will close the public hearing. We're going to move, as the chair indicated, through three more public hearings. There will be no work sessions. We'll move first to House Bill 2181. We have one person who has signed up to testify on 2181. Ms. Harris, if you'll refresh the council's memory on House Bill 2181.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2181B authorizes the Department of Consumer and Business Services and certain regulatory boards to adopt rules that govern the certification of people who are involved in the manufacturing and building trades.
Thank you. And Mark Long, would you care to come forward? Mr. Long, you're the only person signed up for this public hearing, so you have the floor.
Well, I'll try to be brief, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Mark Long, I'm the Administrator of State Building Codes. This is another one of our department's regulatory streamlining bills that we're bringing forward to you. This is a product of a work group that came out of the House Business. This is a consensus bill from our stakeholders and our local government partners that we work with, the Oregon Building Officials Association and others. This bill is designed to improve consistency and flexibility between four of the various licensing boards that I have under my purview. This bill makes terms, processes, and procedures consistent. It also allows us to combine license types so that we can provide greater flexibility to our customers. We worked very hard with all the stakeholders to make sure this did not change any of the policy directives or criteria as far as who can get the qualifications for a license. It simply addresses the inconsistencies between our various boards on how they go about approving applications, renewing applications, and processing licenses. And I urge your support.
Questions from the panel? Hearing none. Thank you, Mr. Long. Appreciate it. Any persons here present wishing to testify on House Bill 2181? Do you have any amendments on this bill?
No, not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2181. I anticipate the chair will schedule a work session
There are some conflicts that were identified by Legislative Council, so when the bill, if and when the bill moves, there will be some rectifying amendments.
Reconciliation amendments.
Yes.
Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2181. We'll move now to House Bill 3240, please. Ms. Harris, would you just gloss the bill for the committee?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3240 is the bill that permits a public employee who chooses not to be a member of a union to pay an equivalent amount of money to a public benefit corporation.
We'll have David Dyer, Mary Botkin, Tricia Smith as a panel. I think Ms. Botkin may have stepped out for a moment.
For a moment.
Go ahead and begin, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Davis Dyer. I'm a resident of Kaiser. I'm an employee of the state of Oregon with Department of Human Services. I wrote the bill simply to make a slight change in the wording, replacing the term in ORS Chapter 243-666 sub 1, from which, by the way, allows a union member or an objector to union support to redirect what would otherwise be the union dues and assessments to a non-religious charity. That's the way that the law currently reads. And I'm simply replacing the term non-religious with the term public benefit corporation. Public benefit corporation is defined in ORS Chapter 65, which embodies all of Oregon nonprofit law, as one of three types of charities. On the other hand, the term non-religious is nowhere defined in ORS, and there might be some who would say it's not definable at all. Simply to say that it's the opposite of religious is not really a definition. So by stipulating that it be a public benefit corporation, you have safety in that the other types, there are three types of charities as defined in ORS 65. Public benefit, mutual benefit, which would include your fraternities and other types of mutually defined or mutually formed organizations, and then religious organizations. And so the public benefit corporation casts as wide an umbrella as possible, but without going into organizations that might or might not be defined as or fall under the auspices of Internal Revenue Code 501c3. And So, by definition, they are not religious. Part of the definition includes that they not fall under the auspices or a definition of a religious corporation. And so I think that all of the questions would be handled or answered or covered let me also say, though, that I also include the foreign corporations. All that is a corporation that is formed under law other than Oregon state law, but that the stipulation in the bill says that it would qualify as a public benefit corporation were it organized under Oregon law. And so there again, all it means is that, say, a corporation that is filed under Delaware law or Connecticut law or Washington law, for that matter, would also be eligible to receive redirected funds from an objector.
As long as they were 501c3.
Yes.
Okay, it seems relatively simple change. Ma'am?
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and I'm here with Mr. Dyer to testify in support of House Bill 3240. OSEA views, first of all, we respect the right of employees who have religious prohibitions against participation in union activities, and this statute was designed to provide those people protection. We appreciate House Bill 3240 because of its effort to take an ambiguous term, that being non-religious charity, which was put in the statutes before the definitions of nonprofit corporations were, and replace that with the current statutory definition that will give us all clarity as to what we are talking about when we said non-religious charity. The statute contained in Chapter 65 defining nonprofit corporations we believe to be very clear, and we believe that public benefit corporation is very clearly defined to specifically exclude religious corporations, and we think this is an improvement to the law, and we hope you will support it and move it.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. We'll call Jessica Severs. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Farioli and members of the committee, Senator Ringo. My name is Jessica Stevens. I'm with SEIU Local 503, Oregon Public Employees Union. Excuse me, and we represent about 27,000 public employees. Excuse me. We have some strong concerns about House Bill 3240. It appears that there is concern around the term non-religious charity being too ambiguous. And my understanding is that there is only been one documented problem with interpretation of that. What our concerns are is that the changes proposed in 3240 are actually in opposition to the spirit of the current law. They would put into statute allowances for public dollars to be dedicated to most nonprofits. It's our belief that there could be a more narrowly defined category of potential recipients of these dollars if, in fact, the statute required changes. Secondly, the intention of the statute is to maintain a separation of church and state, and changes in 3240 would enable public dollars to be directed to religious-based organizations. The definition of public benefit corporation proactively includes ORS 65067, and that is the definition of corporation sole. Although it is a religious corporation, but with only one difference, that being that the corporation can be run by an individual without boards or officers.
Ms. Severs, I have in my hand an excerpt from ORS 65.001, mm-hmm. defining public benefit corporation. There's a specific prohibition against including religious corporation within the definition.
And that is
so the religious corporations are in fact do not fall under the definition public benefit corporation.
However, the definition of corporation sole 65067 is proactively included in the definition of public benefit corporation, and that
say that again slower.
Sure. The definition of corporation sole, which
corporation
is
sole?
S-O-L-E.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is 65067. That's proactively included in public benefit corporation. and that is a form of a religious corporation.
Okay, well, we've got possibly a question about definition, because clearly 65001 indicates a public benefit corporation does not come within the definition of religious corporation. But so, let us note your opposition to the bill and ask for questions from the panel.
No, thank you.
None?
Hearing and seeing none.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Senator.
I don't see Ms. Botkin available to us. We'll go ahead and ask if any other person here present wishes to testify. Mr. Dyer, did you wish to add something?
Thank you. Again, my name is Davis Dyer. In answer to the concern raised by the previous individual, the definitions and the perspective of the definition is to point to what the corporation does, not as to the motivations for forming the corporation. In other words, a public benefit corporation is designed to serve the public, and irrespective of the motivations or the beliefs or the perspectives of those who are actually forming the corporation. So, but a religious corporation is designed to not only promote a particular set of religious beliefs, but also all of their activities are centered around that, and they limit themselves to the promulgation of those beliefs. A church, synagogue, whatever. If they have an arm of their corporation that serves the public through a soup kitchen or something like that, they would be well served, at least under current Oregon law, to form a separate corporation for the benefit of that soup kitchen and then be serving the public, and that would separate it from the church or the religious organization. And so there still is, even with the current or with the proposed change, a separation of church and state if one so needs that.
Further questions? Seeing none. Any other person here present wishing to testify on House Bill 3240? If not, we will close the public hearing. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 3349 and ask Ms. Harris to refresh the committee's collective memory on House Bill 3349.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3349 defines exclusive farm use zone for purposes of zoning and planning, for purposes of approving special assessments of land for property taxation.
Okay, then. We have
some amendments.
Okay.
We have a -6 amendment. There were some conflicts identified with respect to the -6 amendments. I don't know if there's a proponent here who feels strongly about the -6 amendments, but I think that Legislative Council is waiting for some guidance from the committee as to how to proceed to rectify what they consider a conflict between the -6 amendment and House Bill 2932, which was a bill that contained some language about veterans' services.
Mm-hmm.
The -6 amendment also contains language about veterans' services. My understanding in talking with the proponents of the -6 amendment is that the language contained in the -6 amendment, which is more specific and has a narrower scope than the language in House Bill 2932, is that they wish the -6 amendment to supersede the broader language in House Bill 2932, but they're not here, so my sense is that it will probably fall on them to work that out with Legislative Council.
Okay, and we have a -7 as well.
We do have a dash 7?
I have a dash 7.
You have a dash 7.
On 3349.
Okay.
Dated
5/26. We have a dash 7. Yes.
Well, let's call up the panel who are universally in support of this bill. Matt Minahan, Bill Zuber, Laura Borders, Don Schellenberg. Mr. Schellenberg, you can wait in the wings. Welcome.
Thank you. We're actually with the dash 1.
Okay, so we can discuss the dash 1s.
Good afternoon, Chair Ferrioli and members of the committee. My name is Matt Minahan, here today on behalf of the Oregon Pyrotechnic Association, in favor of the dash 1 amendment for House Bill 3349 that's before you today. In the interest of time, I'll just briefly describe what the Dash 1 Amendment accomplishes, and my clients who are fortunately here today and who are licensed pyrotechnicians can speak to it further. Basically, my clients would like to store fireworks on farmland in state-approved magazines where they are currently storing explosive materials. The main point I'd like to make today is this amendment does go forward. It'll allow fireworks to be stored where there's currently high explosive magazines being stored, so there won't be a major influx of storage units into the state of Oregon. As we speak here today, many of these units or magazines that we're speaking about are currently in place. And further, if there's any provisions set forth by the county, such as 50 feet away from a stream or 500 feet away from a barricaded building or any non-barricaded building, those provisions would apply, and that you guys can speak to that more. If there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Okay. So just in short, the Dash 1 amendments would allow storage of pyrotechnical materials in existing locations where they're currently stored in exclusive farm use lands.
Yeah, well, there's a difference between fireworks and explosive materials in the ORS. Basically, my clients can store dynamite, they can store black powder, but they can't take a festival ball that they make and store it in the same place, because in the ORS, fireworks are different than explosive material.
Right, and I think the theory being that there are agricultural uses for black powder and dynamite.
Yeah, they do.
Stump blasting.
There is a
rock mining
that, for stumps and making sure. Cannons to scare away birds and of that nature.
Okay. Gary, add to the understanding by the committee of the Dash 1 amendments.
Yes, Vice Chair Ferrioli and everybody else here. My name is Bill Zuber. My wife and I, Laura, we have a 15-acre Christmas tree farm out in the Beaver Creek area in Clackamas County. And on that, we have a 24-foot shipping container that we use as a magazine. It has been approved by the State Fire Marshal's Office. It has been approved by Clackamas County Fire. It has been approved by the ATF. We have a license with the ATF to manufacture and store on that piece of property. Unfortunately, Clackamas County, the way the zoning laws are written and stuff, that the only explosives that can be stored in that magazine are for the purpose of the zoning, which, like you said, was for blowing stumps, blowing up rocks, scaring away the birds. That's the only type of stuff that we can legally store in that magazine. If we want to have a string of firecrackers in it, that's illegal. Last session, there was a Senate Bill 667 that was passed unanimously almost by both the House and Senate. That allowed one company in Clackamas County that had been there for several years illegally to stay in business on their piece of property. We went to the hearing on the House side. We were too late to get to it on the Senate side, and we testified that, you know, we would also like to be included, you know, as being able to store, you know, fireworks in our magazine. Unfortunately, the way the bill was written, it only allowed the one company to do that in the state of Oregon. What we're trying to do here is to rectify that unfairness and allow other people in the state to also store fireworks in their magazines in the state of Oregon.
Questions from the committee? Ma'am, do you have testimony you'd like to offer?
A couple of safety issues. One thing I'd like to point out is the only non-temporary storage magazine that I know of in the state is owned by the company that was allowed to store fireworks on its land in the last session. Most explosives magazines are immobilized temporary structures like shipping containers such as ours is, or an immobilized trailer for a truck, which can contain fireworks or other explosives, but when moved off the land, leave no mark.
Could you, for the record, just speak your name, please?
I'm sorry. I've rehearsed this. I'm just nervous. My name is Laura Borders. I live in Clackamas County, and I am a certified pyrotechnician.
Thank you.
There are no utilities used by these magazines. They don't leave a footprint on the land. When we move them away from the land.
You wouldn't, for instance, put your bench grinder in there and use
No, we know better than that. We have been labeled as unsafe people, but people who are unsafe don't stay in the fireworks business very long. We have a vested interest in maintaining the safety.
They do make quite an impression on their neighborhood,
yes,
doesn't they?
Yes, we understand that. We're strongly interested in maintaining the safety in the state of Oregon, both for the preservation of the wonderful celebrations that the communities can have as a result of fireworks. Oh, that's me. Sorry. There are two safety issues that I'd like to speak to directly are, where would you like storage of fireworks to be? It seems on its face a very logical thing to want to store fireworks on rural lands simply because it's away from population areas. And so, I mean, I leave that point. The other point is, if a company in eastern Oregon, say, wants to compete for a western Oregon show, which seems like it might be a fair thing to do, they would like to have a place to store fireworks on this side of the state to avoid high-density hazmat loads going back and forth across the state during the holidays. So there's a road safety issue there, too. We have trained hazmat drivers and so forth, but it's just not a good idea to have those people running back and forth across the state during holiday seasons. It's much better to move the fireworks before the holiday season when the density on the roads is, when the traffic isn't as heavy. So.
Thank you. You discussed the dash ones. Does any of the panel have, or any of the members of the committee have questions for the panelists? Thank you very much. We'd like you to review dash six on behalf of your clients. We'll discuss those also. Mr. Schellenberg, would you like to come forward, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Don Schellenberg representing Oregon Farm Bureau. This bill, as drafted, and as it came over, was a clean bill. Its purpose was inoculation, and that was inoculation against the purpose was to prevent unintended consequences under Measure 37. And those unintended consequences would be such that a Measure 37 would disqualify an EFU zone from being a qualified EFU zone, and every farmer and rancher in that zone would then have to file yearly application in order to continue under the Farm Use Assessment Program. So the bill makes that change. I would make a comment regarding the dash sevens as it relates to this. The dash sevens are also related to the dash sixes, and the dash six deals with community centers and their use as a veterans for veteran services. The dash sevens actually deal with the same thing, but when our bill was drafted, it was drafted as a land use bill, and probably was more correctly had it been drafted as a revenue issue than in a land use issue. And so the dash sevens actually would change it to be a revenue issue and then include the dash six amendments. We're not supporting that any longer. We would ask the committee to send 3349 as a clean bill without any amendments to the Senate floor.
Okay, so we'll let the record show that your testimony is to send HB 3349 as drafted without amendments.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Question? Hearing and seeing none. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That concludes the witness list for House Bill 3349. I would just urge the proponents and opponents to study the amendments and be prepared for a work session sometime to come. Questions from the committee? Hearing, seeing them?
Worms, NASCAR, and fireworks.
It's been a great committee so far. In July, in the Capitol building.
Fireworks around the Capitol.
There we go. There being no further business to come before the committee, we are in adjournment.